You're storing memories to lose them again. You'll forget everything when this whole thing ends. You can't even predict what tomorrow brings. But don't lose track of living in the present.
Welcome to the Memory Distillery, everyone. I'm Anthony Veneri.
And I'm John Deck. Now, each week, we will malt, mash, ferment, and distill our way through the spirits of our past in the form of long-loved movies.
And this week, I think it's safe to assume it isn't a zombie, because we're watching Alien from 1979, directed by Ridley Scott. John, this is a movie about an alien.
It's so much more than that, Anthony. In fact,
isn't it, though?
In fact, there may be one or two concerned listeners who believe that our Halloween series of horror and scary movies is getting way off track because last week we did American Psycho, which some people, including myself, I believe have a bit of an argument to say it's not exactly a horror movie, but it has elements there within. And then others were thinking, if you guys do Alien this week, that's not a horror movie either. You're 0 for 2. And I disagree heartily. I think it all depends on how you define horror, and some people think of particular tropes as being necessary for horror, but I just think it's a film where part of the key ingredient in what went into this film is that there's an intention to scare you in many different forms. It could be a lot of different ways, and I really believe that for myself, Alien is one of these movies. I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, but way back when I was really into the series of movies, that it just they do something really special with the suspense that they generate and this alien creature and the threat that they're under, and it's like really incredibly tense with what's going on there. And for me, that combination of being stuck in space, it's kind of claustrophobic. You have a killer alien that's like killing people, and like, what's happening, where is it, and I don't know, and it's gonna kill us. Like, all that just sounds like horror to me. I don't know about you.
No, it does to me too. And I think that for some people, horror is more of a pejorative than it is a genre. Like, you could derive horror from a number of different types of movies that maybe don't fall strictly into the horror movie genre. Like, take Event Horizon, for instance. Like, some people wouldn't call that a horror movie, despite the fact that there are many scary moments in it.
Yeah.
And horrific moments in it. Some people would call it a suspense movie or a sci-fi thriller or whatever whatever label you want to attach to it. This is a movie in that same vein. In fact, I'm guessing that Event Horizon probably took a number of elements from this movie. I keep mentioning Event Horizon because it is one of my favorite movies, and we will do it one day on the Memory Distillery. But no, I think that horror is one of those things that you don't have to be super strict with in terms of, you know, how you define it and what falls into that genre. So I think it's perfectly acceptable to put Alien within that sort of subset of movies.
Yeah, I think we can like confirm or deny that after watching again this time and, you know, clarify how we feel. But like, say again, to go back to our last movie with American Psycho, it was a lot of things, but in my determination after watching it again, I just don't think it really meets that feel. I don't think the point of it is to scare you unless it's an existential threat, you know, which in case, yeah, sure, it's got a lot of that and psychological horror in what it could mean for you as a crazy person. But as far as the standard loose definition, I still feel like there wasn't any real, I never felt like, you know, truly, you know, any element of fear or suspense tied into it. It was just a different kind of animal.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I don't think after watching that and after our discussion last week that it was particularly, you know, a scary movie. And, you know, my bad, I picked that one for the poll.
Hey, but you know,
live
and learn.
Fuck it.
Everybody else voted for it, so
okay, so all of you were wrong too. So no, it's, you know, it is what it is. I think that we're going to be a little more, I think this is going to be a little bit more of an intense viewing than American Psycho was last week. I think that we're gonna definitely have a lot more to reminisce about and sort of ruminate on than we did for last week's movie. I think that this is gonna be, most of our listeners anyway, have probably seen Alien or at least one movie within the Alien franchise. So I think that we're all gonna have something that we can pull from with this movie. So I'm pretty excited.
I've discussed the fact that we're doing this with a few people, and I was surprised that there were, first of all, one or two people who don't think they've seen it, and they said it in this questioning way, which makes me think they probably saw part of it or they've never really been into it. And then there were, I think, two different people who said they honestly couldn't tell the difference between Alien and Aliens, the sequel, which, okay, fair enough. If it's been a long time, maybe you just can't distinguish between them, and that's understandable. Personally, I think there's a very different tone between the two, and I like them both a whole lot. But this one is the one I would definitely say is more of the horror, in my opinion, because of it does such an amazing job with suspense. And so for me, I can tell you, I know we've discussed, we'll probably be watching this from our own personal collections. Yeah. But I'm going to wait till late at night when it's dark and silent and creepy as hell. And I'm going to watch this. I don't remember how long it is. Let's just say 2 hours. But I'm going to spend these 2 hours with nothing else around me and just let myself do my very best to just freak myself out and soak myself into this.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, actually. I mean, going back to what you said about people not really knowing the difference between this and Aliens, I might actually be among that crowd. In my memory, I don't specifically remember plot points being attributed to one movie or the other, and not that I have a ton to pull from anyway. It's been so many years since I've watched this, so there's quite a bit for me to sort of reacquaint myself with regard to Alien. So I'm pretty stoked about that.
Yeah, and the sequel is clearly a Christmas movie, so we could do that one in December.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, I think on that note, the best thing we can do for ourselves and the rest of the world is to jump right into this movie.
Yep, I agree. So what we're going to do here is we're going to pause and go watch Alien, and when we come back, we're going to talk about it and see if it holds up to the horror element that John and I remember it having. As John mentioned, we're going to be watching this from our personal libraries. So if you have it, awesome. If not, feel free to go rent it from any of the numerous streaming rental services that are out there. And yeah, we'll be back shortly. That was a bad note to go out on.
Hey, we'll just have our editor fix that.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be right back.
And stay classy, San Diego.
We're back, everybody. Man, that was sort of unexpected, seeing all of that again. It's, I don't know if we mentioned up top, it's been a fair bit of time since I watched this, and I was actually really surprised by it. You want to jump in here and we'll talk about it, John?
I think that's what the people want. They want to hear us talk about the movie. No,
is it really important what the people want? I mean,
okay, we're switching to Adam's Family instead. No,
the new one.
Of course, the one that's not released yet because we have inside connections. But speaking of connections, I do want to clarify. I realize right off the top that my version of Alien was the director's cut.
Oh, see, I didn't get the director's cut. I had the just the theatrical cut. So.
The regular power.
Yeah.
So I did look up a comparison of the main differences, and I can get to them later. There's really only two main differences that I feel like had an impact on me. The others were like little, like, oh, this scene they digitally added some more stars because they had the technology to, and you know, like little touch-ups.
Sure. What's the difference time-wise there? Because this was an hour 57.
Yeah, well, this was about 2 hours, but they added a few things and took away a few others.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So, yeah. So, it just is... The things they took away was just to try to, like, speed up a few of the edits, where, like, normally they lingered on this particular scene and then they cut it down, but other times they added in more to the scene. So, it was just like, the director, like Ridley Scott, you know, having a different take on a different cut, so to speak, but not like a full 3 hours like the original one before they edited it for the theater. Originally, it was about 3 hours long.
Sure, yeah. I wonder if the differences between your viewing and my viewing, say the differences between the director's cut and the theatrical cut, would have made a difference for me as well. Because I mean, I had a few complaints about what I watched, but they were petty at worst. So, I mean, it was hard for me to find something significant to really gripe on with this movie. And I'm wondering if those things would have been taken care of in the director's cut.
Yeah, I mean, there's one way you could find out, I suppose.
yeah, all right, so we're going to pause here, and I'm going to go watch the director's cut.
We paused and rewatched things so many times now. Hopefully when you edit it, it won't be obvious that we actually took 4 months to record this.
Oh yeah, no. I'll cut it down real nice. It'll sound great.
Yeah, I can't believe we started on the 4th of July, right after we did Independence Day, and now
we're
almost done and it's October.
I wonder what 2019 is going to bring.
Yeah, that's going to be crazy. So anyway, the movie, the way it opens, I'll just say overall that I love the pacing, even though it's slow. Like, I absolutely love how deliberate everything is and the buildup that happens when everything just goes insane. I feel it's like a reward to going through this. I was getting very 2001 Space Odyssey type vibes, and of course, because it's in space and all that kind of stuff. But just with the slow, deliberate pacing where you like know something's coming and even though I know this movie fairly well, I tried my best to just take it as it comes and just try to enjoy it in each moment and not try to think about what's to come. And so from that perspective, just the beginning scenes, which in the director's cut is a little bit more lingering before any introduction to humans happen, is just like an extra minute or so of just the camera panning up and down the empty hallways of the Nostromos.
Well, I got a fair bit of that as well. And I think that probably both versions open that way, although maybe you got, you know, an extra little bit of time with the ship. But you mentioned build up, and I think that that's a great word to describe sort of what you get with this movie, because there's a lot of build up and it doesn't disappoint once you get to the payoff, but there is a ton of just sort of build up and anticipation, and like it you get antsy at one point because you know that something is coming. But I think that that's like you said, that's something that this movie does really, really well. Panning through the ship, I noticed sort of as I'm just sitting there looking at the design of the both the exterior and interior of the Nostromo, that so much of it was familiar, and it wasn't just from previous viewings of this movie. I feel like pretty much every space movie like copied the design in one way or another of the Nostromo, or movies and TV shows. I mean, if you think of stuff like Event Horizon and Firefly, like you get a lot of the same sort of almost utilitarian design in the ship. Did you happen to notice that, or am I just...
Yeah. I mean, you are whatever you were about to say, undoubtedly. So, crazy, stupid, whatever you were going to say, I agree.
I was going to say genius, but go ahead.
Oh, wow, you just hoisted me on my own petard. But yeah, like I really was thinking about that because, number one, I really appreciated so many of the design elements and the difference between when they're, you know, looking at the alien spaceship, as you know, with the pilot and with all the, you know, the that the contrast in the H.R. Geiger designs compared to this more standard version, and like the all the bulkheads and on all the, it was almost like that translation of like a submarine feel to a spaceship, and that design, like you're saying, is in so many of the, at least the more classic and utilitarian design shows. Like, you do definitely have plenty of variety over the years of many different sci-fi, but even more modern things, like you said, like Firefly or like the remake of Battlestar Galactica, like,
sure,
it had a lot of those, the big heavy metal grates and mm-hmm. the doors. Now, I really liked an Alien too, that they use those iris kind of designs, yeah, like that partition the different areas. Like, it's just a cool effect, and just watching this, knowing all of this being done back in the 70s, and just appreciating, like, there are some scenes that definitely look like they're old versions of people trying to think about the future.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they go and talk to Mother, and like there's all the little lights, and, you know, I can imagine they're using, you know, like a dot matrix printer maybe, or, you know, like, all these different technologies that would have seemed so advanced. And so you have those things which look a little cheesy, but hey, this is cool, I like this. But the standard ship design and everything, and even the model, you know, in the outside views, like those are all just great. And then just the, can't say enough about Geiger and like what he brought to the aesthetic of everything Alien related. It just blew my mind to see it again, realizing in the context of history that, you know, they were doing better set design and better creature design than things happening, you know, 40 years later.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, if you look at this movie on the whole, like the visuals for 1979 and even for today are just stunning. Like, you know, you mentioned the alien ship and sort of how that differed from the Nostromo, and it looked fantastic. It was very, very beautifully, elegantly done. And you mentioned the computer interfaces too. I thought that the computer interfaces were super cool.
With the little plug-in, like plug-in, hit a few switches, lift, you know, like it wasn't just like blindly typing at some keys, but there were a lot of intricate different switches and things involved.
Right, exactly. It was very deliberate. You had to do, like, it was almost a code in and of itself. Yeah. And yeah,
on the self-destruct thing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
That was awesome with the little pillars, and yeah, that was really cool looking.
But like, you know, you have the little lights, which is sort of, you could sort of say that that's reminiscent of like Star Trek or something like that, but the overall technological interfaces and the way that they worked with the ship itself was well ahead of its time. And even the way that the text displayed across the screen, like, it didn't make me think of something like War Games or, you know, some just cheesy, you know, I'm typing a thing and now something else is typing back. Like, it seemed very intuitive and it seemed very real.
Yeah, like the exception I would think would maybe even the exception, which would be when they're communicating with Mother and the back and forth, even that had a slightly different feel because it was a certain kind of code and a certain kind of shorthand being used, and it, you know, but it still had that kind of correspondence back and forth with mm-hmm. the traditional monitor and the words that, you know, was, you know, I mean, nothing was necessarily wrong with it. And it was fascinating this time around to really try to imagine, what am I looking at here exactly? Is this, at first, you know, thinking, is this some sort of, you know, secret communication with the corporation that runs everything? Is this some sort of AI that the big, you know, government corporations or whatever set up? And, you know, it's like, it wasn't really very clear who's on the other end of this. Who is Mother? What is Mother?
Right. But I mean, be that as it may, like, it was acted in such a way that you got that sense of frustration when they didn't get the answers from the computer that they wanted. Maybe they didn't use the syntax they had to, or maybe there legitimately wasn't enough information for Mother to, you know, produce a response, but it still felt that way to me.
Well, and then there was that added element of until later when, you know, Ripley gets to the bottom of things, like, you know, that the whole idea of, like, who's the bad guy here? What's actually happening? The is information being held on purpose? Like, what, what precisely was going on? And so to segue seamlessly into another point, I must say that this movie once again reinforced my absolute love for Sigourney Weaver and how awesome she is now. Of course, this, being one of those, cracking open the code to becoming a star. And this is just a big, big time movie for her and her career and developing. But having seen so much with her since this time, even just as recently as her playing, the main bad guy in Defenders on Netflix and like everything she's done from Galaxy Quest to like all the dramatic roles, like there's so much she's done, to then see her in this role where she's just essentially starts off as this generally, faceless, generic, just person in space.
Hey, crew member number three.
Yeah, with they're just out there hauling minerals or whatever, just that they were mining, like no, just nothing, kind of a no expression to her face. It was all just very neutral. And then just as the movie continues, you get to see fairly early on that, she has a bit more of a fight in her, going against captain's orders and, wanting to maintain order and all these things. And then ultimately throughout being the sole survivor and everything that happens in between, it's like, I mean, what a heroine in a time when like women in movies wasn't really, having someone be the main character, in a movie is that was female at the time was not very common. And I know that just from behind the scenes videos and all that kind of stuff, that it was supposed to be an all male crew originally. But the writer said that every role is unisex and could be played by a man or a woman. And so, like, the studio executive people and everyone who wanted to get this greenlit thought, well, it could have more appeal. It'd be different than Star Wars if we had, like, just the male or female, lead being, one of the primary things we could sell on this. And so it just kind of felt, knowing the history, that some of these things were thrown together, but it all feels perfect in the context of the movie as it comes across.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and you're right to think of, in 1979, a female-led sci-fi movie where, the sole survivor is a woman who is not just, a woman, but she's very capable and has leadership quality. And, she's not this damsel in distress. Like, in 1979, you just didn't get that unless it was like Wonder Woman. It was unheard of.
And I very much feel, and maybe this is well-tread territory, that I'm just like saying I have a feeling and everyone's like, no, that's obvious. Everyone knows that. But it definitely feels like Ripley would be the progenitor of someone like Linda Hamilton in Terminator. Like that whole like, oh yeah, it's awesome having like a woman kick ass and be in charge and like, just be... have that capability of being strong and not needing someone to just rescue her, that she could, hey, what a crazy idea. Maybe she can have her own character and she could be scared and she could be vulnerable, but she could also be strong and interesting. It's like, it's so weird that there was this transition and all of a sudden, oh, we can do that. That's okay.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you really do have to wonder if this like set that in motion.
Yeah. I believe it did, and I think that means it's true.
That's sound logic to me. Oh, I had one other thing on the visuals. It was the suits. They're EVA suits when they're like going out and they're exploring this other ship. One thing I noticed that was just a really cool sort of detail that I'd never really seen before in any other movie where you have spacesuits is the CO2 blow off valve,
yeah,
on the top, and it's like steaming out out of the top of the suit. Like it's such a minute detail, but it was something I took notice of and thought was really really unique.
Yeah, they paid so much attention to so many details. Like it made me actually have thoughts about physics and chemistry, and like I was really I was like I was like, why is there so much water in this area? And like, just, you know, like, mm-hmm. just trying to understand if it's in space, what would cause that? And like, it just made me think, and they were so detailed and meticulous that I felt like I could actually have those thoughts. And it wasn't just, well, because it looks cool, but there was even more to it. Like, this would make sense for X, Y, and Z reasons. And like, just talking about when they get to that other, you know, other planet, I guess, and they're going to investigate the ship. What was really funny, just to give you some local flavor and hear a story about my experience watching it last night.
Sure.
I, of course, like I said, I waited till it was like late, like, you know, middle of the night. It's about, you know, 11 or so. And I started watching this, and it was, of course, pitch black, and it was perfect and all. And right around that time, I guess a cold front was coming through here in Vegas, and the wind started kicking up, and it was like blowing trees against my window here, and you could hear it whistling through the windows. And that's right around the time when they were exiting their ship, when, and I don't know if you noticed this, like if it was conscious to you, but when they went on that other ship, like it was super crazy atmosphere and wind, yeah. and like everything was being blown around, and I super noticed it just because that's what was happening, like. Physically around me, it was like amazing surround sound.
No, that's cool. That it just
didn't
sort of
it
like
didn't scare me at all. It definitely didn't scare me at all. I was a brave boy, and everything was fine.
I'm very proud of you, my big brave special boy. No, those are all really cool detail. Another one that I noticed, speaking of like the sort of physics portion, was the acid.
Yeah.
Like as the acid's eating its way through the decks of the ship, like if you just sort of follow movie logic, oh, this is going to, like Dallas said, that's going to eat through the hull of the ship. And like it didn't, it stopped after a couple of decks, and like the acid like started to weaken as it sort of took on the properties of the things it was eating through. And it's not something that you would think of in the details of a movie.
Now let me ask you this, you know, about details. I think this is something that I read was just in the director's cut, and I don't know what you saw in the non-director's cut. So we're going to jump ahead in the progression of the movie. We'll bounce all around the place because we can do whatever we want.
Yes, we can.
I enjoyed a lot of things, but as the alien was like molting its skin and, you know, going from this weird, somewhat threatening, tiny little thing with like tiny little teeth and acid and who knows what this thing's going to do to its, you know, along its more mature xenomorphic stage. We have the scene where Brett walks into the holding, not holding area, but the, I don't know what you would call it.
Like the cargo hangar.
Yeah, the cargo hold, and he's there, and the water's dripping on his face, and he's kind of staring up into the light there.
Mm-hmm.
When that happens, there's a scene that I believe was only in the director's cut. I didn't know that till afterwards, but it was one of my favorite shots in the whole movie. And that's when he's putting his face up into the water. There's a scene where you can see the alien xenomorph slightly, just the shadow of it hanging from the chains.
Oh no, I didn't see that. So,
oh man, it was so great. Like I just, it was one of like maybe one of my two favorite moments. And it's like, again, that whole idea of having a reveal that's not a full reveal, but it's enough that you could almost miss it. It only lasts for like maybe 2 seconds.
So is it just like hanging there, like waiting to pounce?
You see a force perspective from above everything, looking down on Brett, who's looking up into the water, kind of like Shawshank Redemption, you know, just kind of his head up, water's dripping on him. And like in the upper right corner, you're looking down through the chains, but in the far right corner of the screen, all in shadow and in darkness, the chains are swinging. And then all of a sudden you can see just the slightest bit of movement, and you see the faintest outline of the full xenomorph just kind of camouflaged, hanging on these chains right above him.
God. All right, we're going to pause here. I'm going to go watch the director's cut. No, that sounds really cool. I will have to,
yeah,
at some point, watch that director's cut, because I don't think I've ever seen it. Or maybe, at the very least, I could just find the clips on YouTube or something like that.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Because as long as we're just talking about two scenes, or not two scenes, as long as we're talking about the director's cut, I'm going to tell you the other scene that is kind of a fairly big scene as opposed to just tiny little changes.
Sure.
And that's right as Ripley is, she's on her way to getting to the escape ship. What is their names? It's Dallas and, oh, it's Brett. Yeah, it's Dallas and Brett. She comes into a little part of the ship that has like started to be transformed into what looks like part of the other alien ship with the, you know, really funky stuff on the walls that looks, you know, the Geiger designs with all of the alien designs. And then both Dallas and Brett are like cocooned up into the wall.
Oh, and, like, no, I didn't see that either.
And they're like apparently in the process of being transformed into eggs.
That's crazy because I sat there. I'm so glad you brought that up because I sat there at the end of this movie like, there's a movie trope that if you don't see someone die, they didn't die.
So, right, main characters, yeah.
Right. So, like, I'm thinking to myself at the end of this movie, well, what happened to Dallas and, to a lesser extent, what happened to Brett? Because, I mean, it's implied that they died, but, wow, yeah, I had no idea that they were, like, cocooned.
Yeah, and, like, being transformed and melting and who knows what underneath all of that, but, like, but Dallas is just still barely conscious and just begs Ripley to kill him. And so she has a flamethrower with her and just torches them both.
Oh, shit.
And then continues running onto the escape ship.
Wow, that's crazy. And this is like with Jonesy in tow, right? Like she's holding the carrier with Jonesy. Ah, that's sad. See, that's so cool. God damn it. I got to watch that now.
But yeah, so those are the two big changes from my understanding of the director's cut. But they both, I feel, added greatness. I mean, one of them was just a beautiful, great, haunting shot, and then the other one actually helps answer a question about what happened. You're just going to assume that they're dead? You didn't even look for them? I mean, I know you're just trying to get out alive, but right. That's still a little bit weird.
No, yeah, that actually helps tie things together a lot, so.
You're welcome!
Cool. Thank you. I did have a few, like I mentioned before, very petty complaints, and they certainly didn't take away from my overall enjoyment of the movie, just sort of things that kind of stood out to me. The comms situation was really weird. Like, there was way more lag in the comms than you would expect, and at one point, like, they were having a conversation about repairing the ship and, like, how long it would take, and it seemed like they repeated it. Like, they had one shot on the bridge with Ripley and Dallas and basically everyone who wasn't Ash and Brett talking to Ash and Brett, and like you hear that side of the conversation with sort of the back and forth, and then it cuts to Ash and Brett and they say the same thing.
You know why? In space, no one can hear you scream.
Go over the intercom, so you have to repeat
over yourself. The intercom in a timely manner.
So yeah, that was, I don't know, that was just sort of annoying to me. The other thing, and this goes back to the sort of like getting into the kind of private communications room, you know, that whole sequence of, okay, take that card and put it in that slot and then hit these buttons and then you get to go through the door. The beeps and boops and the sort of sounds, the computerized sounds and like the servos and stuff like that. It all just seems sort of over the top to me. Like it was a little unbelievable in the context of when you have this beautiful visual where it's everything is well synchronized and it looks like it's a well-oiled machine and not just some, you know, like slapped together set, to hear those little sort of fakey sounds, just it took away from just the tiniest little bit.
I mean, I guess that's probably part of the problem with being so far ahead of your time is that there are moments and there are scenes and there are sets and there are designs that just are mind-blowing and just really beautiful and are great. And then there's just going to be those filler shots that at the time were probably not even thought of as being, like, you know, obtrusive or, you know, annoying in any level, because at the time they were still good for what they were doing, you know. And so that translation, now we maybe get pulled out of the moment here and there by some of those little details. But yeah, like for me, for some reason, it felt like, because it was just such a, you know, this big mechanical behemoth of a ship, it just felt like maybe it was supposed to be just a bit touchy. It was supposed to be, you know, not derelict or anything, but like it just had that feel, like for me when I was watching, that a lot of the things with communication and the things with, you know, anytime I saw something that felt, you know, kind of a bit off or a little chintzy, I just would be like, well, you know, maybe it wasn't really, they didn't put all the money into the, you know, like into the ship itself. And because it just felt like, and I'm struggling to remember an exact reference, but it felt like there were a couple of times when they had to like do repairs and things, and oh, I hope this thing takes off, and well, like, oh, what do we get? Like,
so I can actually give you an example. When Ash and Brett say, oh, we're ready, there's basically, I'm going to paraphrase, but there's a conversation with Dallas where he's like, well, you know, how ready are, like, how good are we to go? And he's like, well, oh, yeah, some of the auxiliary power's out and this and that. And, oh, no, I can fix that in the air. Let's get off this rock, blah, blah, blah. Like, obviously, I would assume that the Nostromo is an aged ship. Like, it's definitely not new. It's been through repairs. It's probably been through a few overhauls. And I'm guessing that Ash has worked on that ship or one very similar for a long time. And so he knows, like, okay, we can do without this and we can do without that and we'll be okay until we, like, get out into space and you know, up to safety, and then I can fix whatever needs to be fixed.
Yeah, with Ash, you know, he's probably working on this or other ships, like you said, for a long time because he had a special ring that gave him unnaturally long life.
Yeah.
Bilbo!
That was not Ash.
No.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, that's my bad. I'm thinking, I keep saying Ash. I meant Parker.
Yeah, that makes a lot more sense.
Yes. damn it.
I just wanted to bring up the Bilbo reference, so it worked for me.
Although, to be fair, Ash probably did have an unnaturally long life because he was a fucking robot. So, there's that.
Well, I don't know about his sexual proclivities, but he definitely was a robot.
Yes. The jury's out on whether or not he was a fucking robot. So,
speaking of robots and Ash, I mean, I do have to say another little tidbit that I remember from the commentary? I can't remember now. It's been a while since I watched the commentary versus just some special making of videos, but I do remember that Ian Holm hates milk.
Oh, and he had all that
and all those scenes where he had, like, it was a combination of milk and, like, noodles and all these different things when he was getting torn up, and it's like, just to know that he hates milk, but he had to keep gurgling it up during that creepy, you know, dismembering scene and stuff. So I just think that's kind of funny.
Oh man, he must have been miserable for the filming of that part.
So I think we need to address an overall issue with this movie, or not issue, but a question, which is, do you, after watching this, consider this to be a horror movie?
I do, but
okay.
My definition of horror movie is maybe looser than some other people's. I certainly think that this belongs in the sci-fi genre, like the greater sci-fi genre. But to, like, really hone in on the feel of this movie, I think you have to call it horror. I don't think there's any other good way. Maybe thriller, but thriller and horror are so adjacent to each other, like it's really hard to discern the two.
Yeah,
you certainly couldn't call it like an action flick. Like, it's not a shoot 'em up, you know, thing. There's not constant action happening on the screen. And you couldn't call it a comedy by any stretch of the imagination. No, this is a horror movie to me.
I mean, I completely agree, but then again, I, you know, was the one who nominated it for us to watch in this Halloween Horror Month. No, but here I go, not knowing what to say. I'm just overwhelmed with just tears of passion and joy and hilarity. To paraphrase myself from earlier when I tried to speak in a coherent sentence, that the horror subgenre is one that I think on purpose is not narrowly defined. It's open, and it really centers around the idea is fear being generated, is fear being used as a driving force for the narrative and the entertainment and all that kind of stuff. And even if you were to compare this to, you know, some more traditional horror stories where you have like the Jason Voorhees character, or you have Michael Myers, or any, you know, like these where you have an antagonist who's killing people off. I mean, this alien is killing people off one by one, hunting them down, hiding in shadows, you know, like just, I mean, so much of these things are parallel to what you see in these other, you know, classically labeled horror films, that it feels like there are so many different definitions that would put this in that horror category, even if people like Bill Randall don't think so.
Yeah, I agree completely.
So it turns out we're right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bill.
I do have one. I love sharing these little tidbits. I hope our listeners like hearing some of the little things that go on with the movie, not from our observation of the movie, but just from background knowledge. And the guy that played Parker, Yaphet, I think, something like that.
That would be, yeah, Yaphet Kotto.
Oh, yeah. There was a rumor, and this is not a confirmed thing, but there was a rumor that he absolutely did not want to be killed off in this movie. And that he fought and was constantly trying to convince Ridley Scott, trying to convince Dan O'Bannon, who wrote it, trying to convince over and over again the different ways they could get away with having both he and Ripley make it out alive. And, like, I just think, like, it was probably funny the first or second time that he put it out there. But then, like, after they've been filming for, like, 2 months, and he's just like, no, seriously, man, we could do it this way. How about I just get 3 flamethrowers, and that makes me super tough? And, like, I just love that idea. And so that's why we can talk about Alien 7.
Oh, boy.
Starring Parker. It's going to be, Alien 7 is going to be a prequel, of course, but it's also going to be a sequel. Because everything's so messed up with Prometheus and like the, how that changed and shifted. And then we had the next sequel to Prometheus with the prequel to Alien, like all that stuff going on. All you need to know is Parker is back because he was cloned, which of course, sci-fi cloning, easy peasy, no problem. Hey, the twist being
cloning an alien is canon.
Cloning an alien's canon, especially in the midst of the weird timeline that this universe has. So in the midst of this, we have Parker. And guess what? You want to guess? Or do you want me to tell you?
I want you to tell me.
The thing I'm about to tell you that I'm not thinking up right now off the top of my head, but I've known for a very long time, is that Parker was cloned with just a tiny bit of alien DNA. So his saliva is slightly acidic. Slightly. So everything he eats tastes kind of horrible. And that makes him really grumpy.
Oh, does it have that like coppery taste?
The coppery taste. It's also that when cottage cheese goes bad taste.
Oh,
it's,
man.
Like, it's all of those tastes. And that's why when you meet his character first, he's just frowning a lot. And like the rest of the crew that we found out later are all also cloned with a tiny bit of alien DNA. All of your favorite bits, you know, the thing popping out of people's mouths and like, you know, someone has a thing where their tongue is just kind of a bit fatter than it normally would be. So they just stick their tongue out and you go, what a weird tongue. Ugh. And then he goes, sorry, that was part of my alien DNA. And like, it's a comedy, by the way. Did I mention that? This isn't a horror sci-fi. Alien 7 breaks from all tradition and just becomes a straight up comedy. And so that's just part of the fun wackiness. And it's going to be directed by Wes Anderson. And so look for that direct-to-video in 2023.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you need a towel and a bottle of water after that?
I have a bottle of water right here. I'm taking the lid off now. Listen to this audio. That's refreshing.
That's a good pod. All right. So if you were to reboot this franchise and not, you know, not the Alien 7 that you just so lovingly put together, but like do a full-fledged reboot as Hollywood is wont to do in 2019, who would you cast in this reboot?
Good question. I think that it's so hard to not just go into like whoever is hot and like just pick, you know, some of the biggest care, you know, biggest people. So are you asking me about the whole crew or like one person? Because that's a lot of...
No. Give me like, give me a Ripley, give me a Dallas, and give me an Ash.
Okay. I think that... Oh, let's see. So who could some of these? I mean, I feel like I'm spending the most time thinking about Ripley just because.
So I have a Ripley. Let me throw together my three and then
believe it or not. yeah, you tell me what you're thinking. Yeah. I'll ruminate.
So I'll give you my Ripley last because I think that's a pretty good one. For my Dallas, I would like to have David Harbour.
I can't argue there.
For Ash, I want to bring back Ian Holm. but in lieu of that, I think that we could pull a Hobbit and just do a Martin Freeman.
Oh, that's interesting.
And for Ripley, I would like Alison Brie.
Yeah, like I want to ridicule you. I do, because I'm want to do so. But that's pretty solid. I think what I would like, I'm going to start kind of go in a similar pattern, but I'm going to start with Ash because I think I just want to go against type with him just a bit. And I want Tom Hanks.
Ooh, okay.
Just in that, like he could seem super friendly and Tom Hanks like at first. And then there's that kind of a dark twist that his motivations are, you know, he's not going to be as blank as Ian Holm, who, you know, played things very clinical and you just didn't know what the deal was with him. But he's going to start off very, very warm and very inviting. And then there'll be a turn and all of a sudden he's just not going to be that way no more.
I like it.
And then for Dallas, I'm still I want there to be a good chemistry. Like, you know, not romantic, but just like a good back and forth fighting. You know what? I think I know my Ripley, believe it or not. And I think a Lupita.
Keep getting those jokes in, man.
Lupita Nyong'o, I think, could be really awesome. Choice. Like, I think, especially after Us, which I have issues with the movie, but her performance I don't have issues with. But like, I really think she could do that. Like just kind of, she's just there at first and kind of unassuming and then just kind of ramp up into the intensity of the character.
Okay.
And then it's, you know, those reboots, they're going to want some young actors and actresses in there and like young actors that have that arrogance mixed with, you know, that sense of command and entitlement, but also I'm just drawing this blank. Maybe good old what's this bucket, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. Are you about to say Nathan Fillion?
No, I was gonna say Dane DeHaan. Yes. Are you going to have to IMDb him?
I am going to have to IMDb him because I am not familiar with that name. Oh, okay.
I like the idea of someone who is a bit young. I mean, he's not young like a kid. He's in his 30s. But he has that kind of younger, like, how did this kid get in charge of the ship and, like, stuff? But he's, like, he has a very, you know, like a a very logical mind, very, you know, focused, very intense, and he has enough charisma to just kind of, you know, kind of have people follow him and stuff like that. And then I could see a good back and forth chemistry between him and Lupita. Like, yeah, I'm thinking that'll work. And then Tom Hanks just got to throw him in, because won't that just be fun?
That's a
very, that's my cast.
That's a very good mix. I like that.
I try my best.
I have one last question. This should be a little easier for you, and you probably already know my answer.
Event Horizon. I don't know the question, but that's probably your answer, right? Oh, I don't know. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go on. What was the question?
What's your favorite space-related horror or thriller?
That wasn't really your question, was it?
It was, actually, yeah.
We were screech record sound when you no. I mean, I will say that it's very close for me between Alien and the sequel Aliens. They're different movies. I feel like this one has a bit more of the horror element, but I also would say that an imperfect movie that there are aspects that I love that I wish I could like maybe remake or touch up is Sunshine by Danny Boyle.
Oh, have I seen Sunshine?
Oh, man, like 2/3 of it is great.
Well.
I mean, just talking about just gorgeous atmospheric movies, you know, being in space. And, like, it's not, it doesn't have, like, an alien protagonist or, like, a specific, you know, like, creature thing. It's more like the intensity and the thriller horror aspect of what goes on with people within this ship lost out in the middle of nowhere, and are people going crazy? What's happening? Who knows? You know, and
just looking at stills from this, I feel like I've seen it, but now I'm going to go back and watch it just to sort of confirm. The cast is solid, though.
Oh yeah, it's a great cast. It feels like, in my opinion, like they really had some really good ideas, and then it just got a little bit away from them in the execution. That's just, you know, I wouldn't necessarily want to do a whole podcast on it, but there are elements that I absolutely love about it. So
cool.
I'd say that gets special mention, but Alien and Aliens are at the tops for me.
Good pulls all around. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us, folks. Thanks so much for hanging out with the Member Distillery every Monday. Stay tuned each week as we distill another favorite from our past, and make sure that you're keeping your eyes glued to the polls that we have going on Facebook all October. We have one up now. Do we? I don't know. Our recording schedule is a little tenuous at the moment just because of personal lives, but we will have new episodes up every Monday regardless. But keep an eye on Facebook anyway.
Yeah, just keep watching Facebook, because, you know, when I hear Facebook, do you want to guess what I think about, Anthony?
Is it going to be...
That's right. It is. It's Destroying the Evidence by Semaphore, the song that we heavily feature throughout our podcast each and every week. You should check out not just that song, but all of the work that they do, and maybe one day we can all go to a concert together. As always, as Anthony's saying, keep your eye on Facebook for all our polls and different things being posted so you can participate. We love that. And if you have any additional things you want to send us, your thoughts or input or additional questions or just, you know, whatever, you just want to tell us your favorite recipe for cheesy potatoes, send that in to thememorydistillery@gmail.com. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, for talking about cheesy potatoes and looking at alien xenomorphs. This is John Deck.
And this is Anthony Veneri. And this has been the Memory Distillery.
Oh, yeah. That was one of my favorite podcasts we ever did about cheesy potatoes. I hope you don't cut out that half hour segment in the middle where we get into that.
Oh, wait, I lost all that audio. Oh, no.
I guess we could postpone that to the other movie that features cheesy potatoes.
Yep.
A Little Miss Sunshine.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was Garden State, but...
Well, I was, you know, there's Sunshine, the horror space movie, A Little Miss Sunshine, which I believe was a sequel to Sunshine, but they were just littler and misser in space.
Right. And then and then Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which turned out to be a prequel.
And a sequel, just like the whole alien thing. Yeah. It's so weird. Yeah.
That's a great connection.
Yeah. And then, but then the true sequel to Invisible Spotless. What? My words are broken. Eternal Spotless Shine of the Mind is a thing in orders that makes sense. All of that to set up the big joke that's going to fall flat afterwards, where I talk about how it leads into The Beautiful Mind.
Ah.
Because they're all tied together. It's cool.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.